The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.org.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.
This is Ross Coulthart, and you are listening to That UFO Podcast.
Welcome, folks, to the second part of the podcast. If you are just joining in a couple of days later, shame on you for not being on the paid feeds, but no, thank you very much for listening. Please don't turn off. but otherwise, you may have heard it all in one go if you're on any of the paid platforms. Before, Dan, we get to listener questions. You wanted to bring in a little bit more on the Greer topic there, yeah?
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on, because no doubt Greer, during the Kardashians podcast, used the term briefing, and, you know, there's always conversation around what he means by briefing, and I think it's important to touch on kind of the idea of disinfo or misinfo, and just how people play things off when they don't necessarily have all the facts for people that might have listened to that podcast and have found us for some reason and are wondering if everything you said is true. There's been two things this week that kind of made me think of Greer and his briefing stuff. The one is about black holes, and the other one is to do with pyramid scans. So I'll just kind of go through these and just use them to emphasize that people need to be vigilant when they read something that is presented as fact. The first one, there were a whole bunch of articles from places like The Independent, Space.com, Futurism, Gizmodo, like this was everywhere, about one of the articles, for example, says, the headline is, "Unexpected James Webb Observations Hint We Might Be Inside a Black Hole." And that's tantalizing. I've heard a lot of people talk about that. But I found this really good Science Court communicator who kind of broke it down, the claim and kind of why it means that and what's nonsense about it. And I just wanted to read that to kind of illuminate. She says, and this is Space According to Skylar on Threads. She says, as always, the best thing to do when confronted with mind-bending headlines like these is go to the source, which in this case is the article about measuring the direction of galaxy rotation using James Webb. They looked at 263 spiral galaxies and found 105 rotate counterclockwise, 158 rotate clockwise. That's enough of a difference to be unlikely to happen if rotation directions are just random. It's worth noting that determining the direction of rotation is tricky, and previous works that do this vary in terms of how well they align with randomness. So how do we get from that difference in rotations of galaxies to we live in a black hole? She says, well, if they really aren't random, it could be attributed to either something to do with the dynamics of galaxies and how they move, or something to do with the structure of the universe. if it's the first, this asymmetry could come from observational biases associated with our own rotation, because we're rotating in the Milky Way. Or it could be that we just don't fully understand the physics of galaxy rotation, which is not simple. A larger scale interpretation would mean the early universe had some homogeneity that would make galaxies rotate in a similar direction early on. There's a bunch of different ideas that display this, and one of them is the idea of black hole cosmology, the idea that the universe is in a black hole. Black holes spin, so a universe inside a black hole would also spin, so there'd be some preferred direction for galaxy rotation. But this is just one of many possible explanations for these results. So I can stop reading there. And I just thought that was interesting because she kind of cuts through the bullshit to say the headline that they've claimed, you know, is the whole thing, is actually one of many, many different reasons this could be happening. And when you dive into the actual paper, you find out that this is ongoing work, it's not finished, and these publications are stating that it's a fact. I find diving into the science of it really interesting. Some people might not be, but the claim is a lot sexier than talking about different rotations of galaxies, right? So that's one example of, you know, just keep your wits about you when you read these things. Doesn't necessarily mean what you think it means. The second one I wanted to touch on is the pyramid scans. If you've been on social media this week, people might have seen these claims that underneath the pyramid in Giza, the Great Pyramid, they have found a whole host of cylinders that are just under the pyramid and go down. I think that it was like 600 meters, which is about 4 or 5 times as much as the height of the actual pyramid itself above ground. However, when you look at the paper that this is based on, the claim that physical structures were found under the pyramid is false. They have not found any physical structures under the pyramid. What they have done is use a satellite to scan the densities of the material under the pyramid, and they've got some interesting results, which show different densities under the pyramid. There's no kind of control test. You know, they haven't scanned anywhere else except just under the pyramid, so they can't see whether the results are flawed or anything like that, or if it works. But a bunch of researchers with some other kind of claims about Giza and the pyramids and everything have basically taken that data and have pushed this story of these massive cylinders under the pyramid, made some 3D models, and because it's sexy, it's spread around social media like wildfire. And it really exemplifies the problem with social media, because there are so many people talking about this now as if it's fact, when they haven't confirmed it at all. They haven't even done their due diligence to see whether this is true, whether the data is just noise or whether it's actual data that's usable. You know, if anyone's watched Skinwalker Ranch, you know that they scan under the plateau and under the ranch itself. They find some interesting results that show different density of materials, but they kind of stop there. They say it might be this, it might be that, it might be this, it might be that. But they don't claim that it's definitely a UFO under the ranch, for example. And probably that's kind of but that's kind of what's happening here, you know?
Yeah.
And even the technology itself that's used to do this, it's thought that it can't actually penetrate as far into the ground as the researchers are claiming these columns are high. So there are so many flaws with this, and there's no paper out there yet, and yet you have these sexy videos and, you know, people getting stupid amounts of views and clicks and stuff like that on their channels just talking about this thing that just isn't a real thing, essentially. Right now, it's a hypothesis and a press conference. It's not a scientific paper that's peer-reviewed and actual data that's put forward. And I saw someone called NXT who does like tours in Egypt and stuff like that, who is, I follow him because he's always good. He's always on the up and up about these kind of things, even though he's fascinated by the possibility of ancient cultures being a bit more advanced than we thought they were. He said, it's like seeing shapes in clouds and calling it architecture. Just because a pattern looks man-made, it doesn't make it so. And I think that's a great summary of this. It's okay to be interested, but don't just take these 3D models that have just been made up by someone and think that it's confirming that these things are there. And both of those examples, the black holes and the pyramid scans, just speak to the problem with social media and how fast a mistruth or a misunderstanding in some cases can travel around the world and through our media and become something like, you know, if someone came into this conversation going, oh, I'm interested in the pyramids, I've never read about them before, they're now going to think that this is an established fact when it's not. And people like Graham Hancock and other folk like that, they thrive on this kind of gray area. And in a way, it's destructive to the actual conversation about these civilizations and the architecture they left behind, because it just distracts people. You know, if only people were talking about the actual facts with this much kind of passion and things like that, it would be wonderful for these things.
I don't think people have the attention span these days for that. But what I've taken away,
Dan, the other issue.
From what you have said there, is there are two huge structures underneath the pyramids at 600 meters deep. So that's fascinating. Thank you for
letting us in on that. Just cut it out. Just make that the clip for this show.
Really, and you know what? I've changed the order of the listener questions slightly now, because not that I had much of an order before, but based on what you have just said, Stephen asked us to discuss the photo of the tic-tac-shaped object on Mars.
Did
you see this?
I did, yes.
So I saw it, and I'd done a little bit of quote-unquote research. I clicked around some websites and links, and I saw... So for anyone who's not seen, this is it's the age-old, and I don't mean that disparagingly, the Mars rover shots, and they put the raw files up on the website. Anyone can go look at all these millions of photographs taken of the surface of Mars, and many of them do have, and we've talked about this before, Dan, there are photographs where it certainly looks like there potentially are some interesting shapes, or sometimes it looks like a door or an odd shadow or a figure or a statue or something broken that maybe once was something more whole. But I am fully aware that these things can just look like that because it's a still picture. It could just be an angle, awkward lighting, whatever it may be. But I'll still stick by, there are some photographs of things on Mars that look particularly suspect. This is one of those photos where there is an object that looks like, at face value, a tic-tac, because it's got a shadow underneath it that may or may not be from that object completely, on the surface.
Hold it up here for YouTube viewers.
Yeah, for those on YouTube, you'll see it. I'll stick this one in the thumbnail. But Dan, so that photograph, I mean, I can't see that is an awkward shaped rock and the shadows just of something else in the wrong place. And I did look at some Reddit threads on it as well, where there was one particular thread where the guy was like, look, I'm not coming out here saying this is a UFO, but some of the debunking isn't accurate. And he put some comparisons and stuff side by side. What's your take on that? Are we looking at an object hovering?
It's a really interesting one, isn't it? Because the way that the shadows are, it doesn't look like it's on the ground. And I spent ages, so there's this kind of, you know, that's the full picture that people have kind of zoomed in on here.
Yeah.
And I spent ages looking around it for any object that looks similar, you know, like, is there anything in this picture that looks similar to that I can say, nope, that's definitely a rock, therefore it's just a weird angle. And the closest I could get was this one. And like, it doesn't look anything like it. You know, like, the rock is starting to become rounded. You could imagine maybe in, you know, 5 years or whatever, it'll look a bit more like this object. But the particular object we're talking about, it looks like it's reflective. You know, there's like a little glimmer of light on the side there. The one thing against it kind of being this big UFO for me is that in the picture we're looking at the scale of this thing, we'd be looking at probably like 20 centimeters to a meter. You know, this isn't a large object. Doesn't mean it can't be something anomalous. But it's really intriguing, and I've yet to kind of come across an explanation that convinces me that it is prosaic. And through looking myself, I can't see how that's just a normal rock. Like, even looking now as we're talking about it, it's just like, no, I can't.
I agree.
I'm really trying to kind of come up with a...
I am with you, and I'll just say, for fair sake and from transparency's sake, I still believe it is just probably going to be something prosaic. It's the angle, it's the image, blah, 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 blah. However, I've still to see that argument. So I'm not going into this going UFO caught, picture caught on Mars, you know, I'll leave that to the Daily Mail. who've done that, they do that quite often. But it's pretty interesting. And like you say, I'm surprised. I thought Daniel might come on a little bit more with it. But even you're looking at it going, I can't instantly see that it's not something, because it's really smooth and round looking. And it does look like it's up off the ground. Even if I done the thing you probably did, Dan, where you look away and look back, look away, look back, and like, okay, I'm going to try and look and see that it is there. And it's almost like that magic eye thing where I just can't see that this is an object sitting flat, but it could just be a whole number of things. So yeah, but it's on there. I'll put the link in the description as well, folks.
I would advise when people are looking at this, because there are color photos out there, there are high definition photos out there. They're all AI influenced or upscaled and stuff like that. Don't look at those ones. Look at the one where you can, like, you know, on this one I'm holding up, you can see this kind of pixelated effect. That's the raw image from NASA. Deal with that. Otherwise, you're getting a whole bunch of information that is going to lead to headlines like we were just talking about with the black holes and the pyramids.
Slight sidebar, right? Did you watch the lunar module landing in the ocean from space?
I did, yes.
Right. That looked like, me and Susan watched it, me and my wife watched it, folks, right? It looked like CGI, and it was like a drone shot. And I've said this quite often, you know, a lot of the SpaceX videos where the modules are going back and landing in the structures, which is pretty cool, incredible feat of engineering. And people film it, obviously, from distances as well, where they're watching on these viewing platforms and stuff. This video of that beautiful blue ocean looked incredibly fake. And I, even when the module goes into the water and the camera goes really clear, and it's like a lovely HD 4K picture, I was looking going, that doesn't look real. And the boats come along and the dolphins and stuff, but did that look real to you?
I'm with you. Like, I think because they haven't used drones to film these things splashing down before, it just looks kind of almost hyper-real, like you're watching CG or a movie or something like that.
It looked really clean.
Yeah, like too clean, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I made a comment online, and not as the podcast feed, just I think it was on my normal Facebook, and I just basically said, you know, as I do, I'm like, I'm not saying this is fake, folks, but me and my wife watched this, and it looks like CGI. So many folks then jumped in going, that's because it is CGI, and then other folks calling me an idiot for thinking it was fake, and I was like, I'm not it's fake.
But it was
arguments when started, the like
credits came up and it said directed by Stanley Kubrick. That was the giveaway.
Yeah. Massive, with thanks to Mick West, Stephen Greer, you know, all that lot. But yeah, sorry for the sidebar. I mentioned in the Discord, Dan, about the David Grush news, joining in with Burleson and co. And Trevzy made a comment to say his concern is once these people are sucked into the machine, then we are less likely to hear from them. He's now in the tent pissing out rather than outside pissing in. Great phrase. Similar with Elizondo when he was touting for a job. Can't blame the individual. So what's your take on that take from Trevzy?
Yeah, I don't think Trevzy's entirely off the mark there. That's the worry, right? That, like we touched on earlier, that by becoming a part of this, he's going to be muzzled and it'll only be certain people on that task force kind of speaking for him, as opposed to him being at the forefront speaking for himself. It's a tricky balancing act for them. I imagine Grush is going in, you know, hand on heart, trying to do this for the right reasons, but he's surrounded by people that all have their own reasons for being there. And so we're just going to have to watch and hope, but it's only 4 months. So we'll see the results at the end of those 4 months and see where it comes to. But yeah, I'd be fibbing if I said that wasn't a concern.
Yeah. So my thoughts on that, and I think I touched on it, is that idea that, similar to when we touched on Skywatcher and are Jake Barber and co trying to get messages out to folks to almost say to them, bring us in, let us get involved in this, let us help, and we can get out what we want to without breaking the whole thing open, because I don't think that's a good idea or possible still, just my opinion. But perhaps they're trying to say, look, Grush is a similar thing, so maybe Grush has came out, said what he said, given a lot of nods towards certain things with the view of, let me come and talk about this, let me be a spokesperson, maybe we can move forward in a way that's beneficial to everyone here. So, yeah, but I get people's concerns. It's always going to be the case, isn't it? Strange but true. I left this off the main news coverage because I thought we could just talk about it here, because I don't know if there's too much to cover. But a few folks, Dan, had asked about updates on the drone stuff from the last few months. Has it all been forgotten about in the media? Now, 60 Minutes did cover this. The show 60 Minutes runs for 43 minutes, folks, because of adverts and whatnot. And then the drone... Transparency. The drone section of the special lasted about 13, 14 minutes of that time, okay? So it gets about a third of the show. I felt from the off in this... Did you see it, Dan, the segment?
I've seen...
clips.
I've watched two videos. I wasn't sure it was the whole thing, though. So it's on my list to go get.
You'll have got the gist of it, to be honest, mate. From the off, I seem to get the idea they're pointing to this being a spy system of some sort. There's nothing really in it about UFOs. We do see some of the triangle pyramid videos within there from the Snoopy teams.
Sure.
But they very much come at this from spy systems. These are drones being launched by an adversary. You know, what's going on? Why aren't we defending them? General Glenn Van Herk, who is the former chief of NORAD, is one of the talking heads on it. He's the dude in the suit with the grey hair, aren't they always? And he's being asked about it, and he basically points to this being, well, logically, yes, that's what it is. So I said from early on with the whole drone situation, Dan, they were drones being launched from... it might be a Chinese cruise ship. It might be something like that. Because I think they even mentioned, I can't remember if it was one of the Corbell Knapp videos of the drone swarms. I wasn't too sure. Sorry, I should have went back and watched it. But they mentioned, they even show you a picture of a Hong Kong registered vessel, cargo ship.
That's the Omaha. Yeah.
And they literally say, we believe these objects were launched from this. But we've heard that these things are out in the ocean and they launch 40 to 50 or 100 of them. Why not? Why wouldn't Beijing have this technology? The US will have this technology, not be admitting it. They're just all spying on each other with cool cameras because they've moved on from pigeons. So I can't see around any of this being anything other than US being spied on. And in the piece, they're quite aloof around, well, why aren't we dealing with it? They're like, well, we can sort of do it now, but you know, it's not perfect, blah blah blah. I reckon they're allowing it in the same way that China would allow the spying, to see what they're going to do, to see what the tech is. It reminded me, Dan, here comes an analogy for you, right? You know when you don't know what a competitor or an enemy has until they show their hand? So in work, I like playing, I mentioned, like EAFC, so FIFA football game on the PlayStation. And I'm pretty good at it. I'm decent. I'm not world class, but I'm decent. So I can play a game. So in work, there were some young guys playing it and they wanted me to play it. And they were like, oh, are you any good? And I went, yeah, I've got a decent record, blah, blah, blah. I don't know how good they are. They can tell me they're brilliant and I can tell them I'm brilliant. But until we actually go head to head, and it takes a while to get into the game. So for the first couple of minutes, I'll tend to just pass the ball about a little bit to see what they do. And judging from how they move and what they do, how they play, I start to get a feel for what I need to do for the rest of the game. And I feel with these drones, this is what China and Russia and the US are doing, where they don't completely know what each have or exactly what the technology is and where it's at. So they just let them mess about a little bit, because then that helps them go, okay, Langley got infiltrated. We knew they were coming. They came from this location. This is what they done. They loitered. We think this is what they might be. Here's some of our really good cameras and sensors and what they picked up. And this is for us only. that's what I think is going on with the drones. I don't think they're UFOs, folks, unfortunately.
And to add to what you just said, like, imagine if, so it's you playing the football game against, instead of one guy, it's four guys. And you know that they're, like, increasing difficulty and they've got some mates on the end of the phone that are even better than them as well.
Yeah.
Like, there's probably an aspect of you that's like, this first one's crap. I won't show off. Otherwise, they're going to, you know, if you've got money on it, for example, you don't want him to call in the big guns. Mm. You don't want him to call his mate that he knows is like shit hot on that football game. So you're going to play a little bit worse than you know you can play and still win, right? So there's a scenario where they're saying, yeah, we can't stop them, where they bloody well can, but they don't want to, because that will make whoever is, say, China, for example, go back to the drawing board and come up with technologies that are even better than the ones that they've got out there now. And then it might get to the point where the US literally can't stop them and they can't do anything about them. So at the end, the capability might be, they're not doing anything crazy, but we know we can take them down if they happen to have a payload that we deem dangerous. Yes. So there's no need to engage them. And cause that kind of chain reaction of technological advancement or, you know, difficulty upping to happen. So they'll just play dumb and let it happen. And they don't want to show their hand, like you said. Kind of pool shark in on an international level.
Yeah, and they're not doing anything that we are not doing to them. And
yeah,
they know we know, they know we know. You know, that's the theme of this show.
that's it. Call it that. They know, we know, they know.
They know, we know. Christian Morales, Christian over at Kill the Stigma podcast. Go give Christian a follow over on YouTube, folks. He started that a couple of months ago. And
opinions,
yeah. He said, I finally hit my limit. I had a moment of clarity. We are all different, but most of us share an interest in this topic for different reasons. Psionics, or CE5, I believe is real. I think Barber is the real deal, but I draw the line there. What do I mean by that? It means I believe him. I believe he's got the capabilities, and the US government might know about this, but I'm not going down that rabbit hole. I'm not doing CA5. I'm not researching psionics. I'll let others do that. So that was his comment, Dan. And I don't find it unfair that he's like, I believe him. I don't want to know more, though, or I'm going to let others look into that, because you can just go, yeah, that's fine. I've got a gut feeling, or... like you mentioned, like CE5, psionics, these are just human initiated contact, whatever you want to call it. These things have been going on for a long time. People should go check out James Iandoli, Engaging the Phenomenon podcast. Yes. He talks about this stuff a lot. I've talked about it with him in the past. I'll need to get James back on, but this isn't new. CE5 is just a brand, you know. McDonald's didn't invent chicken nuggets, but they invented McNuggets. You know, that's a branding. It's just a, sure. And you mentioned psionics. You said earlier, it's just the name it's being called. You know, that's, so I get that, where people have their point where they go, okay. And I think that's where I'm at with the Skywatcher stuff. Cool. You've made some wild claims. I'm willing to accept that. And I've tried to reach out to the guys there to get people on, but only Blitch so far is really doing much. To come on and talk about what they could potentially do. But I also get why they might want to be a little bit guarded and be like, let us do some stuff. They've came out, they have to be public, but they're also like, let us do the work we're doing. But again, to your point and a lot of other folks, Dan, at some point they have to show they're working.
Yeah, absolutely. They've got to, otherwise it just stops for them, right? Like, they either go back into whatever program they were working, or they go back to their normal lives. Like, the good thing with the Skywatcher initiative is that it has a finite kind of life to it. And I'm sure someone said that about Stephen Greer's claims at some point. But like, for this one, I feel like that's true. You know, people haven't embraced this initiative with open arms. A lot of people are dubious, I'd say, you know, roughly 50-50 split. But people are willing to let them do the work and see what they get out of it. And they're being funded. They've got the personnel. If anyone's going to show this works this year, it's them.
Is that because where we are now, though, in the conversation, and when I asked you where disclosure is, say this had happened in 2017, 2018, 2019, would there have been a more positive reaction or more open acceptance of it? But because of where we are now, where you said it's muddier than it's ever been, it's just another thing and another claim that's not going to be given its own merit and its own time necessarily by everyone, because there are a lot of folks going, another claim. It's another thing to add.
Kind of. I feel like this one's more to do with how woo this is.
Okay.
You know, everyone's fine with the nuts and bolts conversation. I'd say all woo people are nuts and bolts people, but not all nuts and bolt people are woo people. So, you know, just the majority of the community, if not all of them, yeah, there's something there. There's a there, as the phrase goes. But when it comes to summoning, consciousness, all this kind of stuff, people, that's where it gets a bit ropey. And for me, calling the subject kind of muddy is in part because of things like Skywatcher. You know, I'm not condemning them because I don't know whether they can do what they say they can do yet. But it's certainly muddied the waters to introduce this into the conversation.
Like, it could be damaging if it doesn't do anything, or
yes,
it just, like a lot of things and many not just UFOs, but in a lot of topics like this that discuss anything kind of odd in nature or paranormal or whatever, they kind of fizzle out. Like you say, this isn't something that in 3 years' time we should still be talking about waiting on results, because you're like, why? But then folks, yeah, would maybe point to Skinwalker Ranch and be like, season six. Like, why is there a season six?
Yeah, that's fair. I would say in that case, the difference is that they've always said they're doing a TV show, and what they're trying to achieve, you know, it's not as well defined as we can summon things in the sky. Let us show you us summon things in the sky. There's so much kind of different things going on in Skinwalker that it's hard to pin down. That would be the main difference, I think.
Okay, that's fair. So on that then, as a way to think of this, is Skywatcher the new NIDS Bigelow Aerospace investigations at Skinwalker Ranch originally, when there was no TV show, when it wasn't well known, when it was a government program, but we know about it?
Yeah, that might be a better way to think about it. Like they don't have any ducks in the we're making a TV show basket. Well,
but there's more of a mythology, and almost for some, there's more of a credibility or a myth or mythos to the early days of Skinwalker Ranch because of how little is known about it, as opposed to if Colm Kelleher, Bigelow, and the others involved had cameras there at the time filming it, and you had a season one, two, and three of the early days of all that stuff, would it be as credible or well thought of?
Yeah, it's a good question. Like, for me, the difference is still in that, like, you know, what they're trying to do. I think with NIDS and with Skinwalker, you're trying to define what you're trying to do. You know, there's weirdness, that's it. Like, there's so many different kinds of weirdness there that it you can't just go, we're gonna find a UFO, or we're gonna dig, or we're gonna just do this or just do that. Whereas with Skywatcher, it's one specific thing. So I'd say it's like if NIDS went on in your scenario, but the only thing they were interested in doing is digging. And they're like, we're going to dig. And it's like, okay, that has a shelf life. That's not going to go on for forever. I say that, season six. But yeah, you see where I'm going.
Yeah, the biggest hole. Season six, the hole continues. But no, thanks for that, Christian. Amy says, so following on from that, can you speculate on what's going on in the Jake Barber video when a craft is summoned psionically and a second craft appears and seems to be trying to disrupt the summons? Some of my questions are, who or what was operating the second craft and why? Is there NHI in either of the crafts? If there is NHI in a psionically summoned craft, why would it allow the craft to be overtaken? To be clear, and I'll go back over those, Dan, I'm not interested in summoning anything or anyone. I'm just trying to make sense of what I saw in the video. People seem surprised to see the second craft. Dan, do you want to cover that again? Because I think you talked about that before, didn't you?
Yeah, so this is one of the clips where when you look at it and you like really zoom in on the high definition version of it, you can see that one of these crafts, it's moving in like a, I mean, this is audio, so, you know, I can't expect everyone to hear. But you can see what look to be wings, basically flapping as this thing moves across the image. And then the other kind of light in the sky appears. So for me, there's only one thing in that video that looks like it could be an anomalous effect. The other thing looks to me to be a bird. Obviously, that's debatable. For all I know, that's what UFOs look like, and they have flappy wings. Like, I don't know. But why would the other craft show up? I totally don't know. Like, you would expect that if there was a race of beings that could make a craft that could be controlled psionically, then you would expect there would be protections against something overtaking the craft. So you'd have to kind of extrapolate and think, well, then either there's no protections and that's a reflection of their society where they don't need security and they don't have paranoia and they don't have privacy, or you go the other way and think, well, then this is something being given to us that maybe it kind of has a frequency that human psionics can hook onto, mm-hmm. and that it's for us. But both are really interesting. For me, the bit in, they said during one of these kind of summonings that their psionic guy hooked onto a craft and then like let it go and it fell. What did they go get it? You know, like where did that go? I want to hear about that.
It could even be, and that's a proper wild speculation. I should do one of these stoned one night. I don't know what YouTube's thing are or not, but
I mean, Joe Rogan made a career out of it, right?
Yeah, I don't know what my wife would say though.
Hot dogs the shed.
Yeah. Oh God, can you imagine? You know, maybe this is the next evolution in what these objects have been trying to do now for years, where they are gifted to us, where we find them. Is this, and this alludes to what you were saying, Dan, is this that something else, that these entities, they've given us enough of these craft over time that maybe we know, and we've talked before, like, are they made, are they grown, what are they, maybe they're manifested, so maybe these things have gave us enough of these to be like, you create these, you can manifest these types of craft, and this is how it's done, and maybe this is us with the really early attempts to manifest and bring these things through, and like you say, something's allowing us to do it, or it's just we know how to do this in a way. I don't know, but then
yeah, that's an interesting thought. Like, what if that's just something we can do, and then it speaks to the whole, I know Tom's spoken about this, right, that we can think our reality into what we want it to be, and you can think of this in a really practical sense. You know, like the first person that made fire, he thought that he needed something to warm something up, and you know, and he would have come across something, maybe like a lightning strike on a tree where fire was made naturally, mm-hmm. and he was like, oh yeah, I want to kind of do this, and so his thinking is what led to the manifestation or the creation of fire purposely. So it takes a lot longer than just, you know, thinking it into existence. So I think both kind of apply. Either way, it's like being inspired by reality to create the direction that you want to go and the thing that you need, whether that's an iPhone immediately or whether it's working on specific components of the iPhone so that, you know, in 10 years you can make the full thing that you have in your mind. I don't know, but it's awesome to think about, especially when you think about that creativity causing, you know, the whole world around us, the thing I'm talking to you on, the thing I'm talking into, the thing that listener sent in the question via, you know, that all came into being because of thought. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting to think about whether we need to do it that way or whether there are shortcuts.
Yep. Yeah. No, interesting. Again, thank you. And KR said, what's your reaction to Jay Stratton's comment when a reporter asked him what he would ask a non-human intelligence if he ever met one? And he responded, Dan, with, who says I haven't? Have you saw that clip?
I have, yes.
Yeah. I took nothing other than he's just being playful.
yeah, it came off as playful for me as well. Sorry, that last question really got me. I'm thinking now about like Jack Parsons in the desert doing rituals while he's building rocket engines for inspiration, and countless people. There was a Nobel Prize winner who saw like glowing raccoons that went on to create something incredible. I can't remember off the top of my head what it was, but it was something like X-ray machines or something like that. Sorry, I'm just thinking about that intuition, creativity, manifestation.
We'll separately do one of those chats, because I think, given the nature of it, I'd probably stick that behind a paywall. Sorry, folks. But just because of the nature, you would just have to sit and rabble at each other about, yeah, but what if, but what if, but what if. I don't think it would necessarily be entirely structured in terms of a conversation.
Yeah.
But you could sit and just go...
I'd be curious what, like, main channel free feed folk would think about something where basically it's, you know, maybe not with the smoking, but, you know, just going off on tangents. And
yeah, there's plenty of free trials, folks. You can sign up with no commitment, but yeah. But plenty more here still, Dan. Oh yeah, so Stratton, so what did you think just on the comment?
Yeah, I thought he was being playful. If I was the reporter, I would have just said, okay, you still haven't answered the question, though. What did you ask?
This was at like the premiere for Age of Disclosure, wasn't it? It was asked about it, so it wasn't just asked in the street. So it was kind of in like media mode. Do you think Stratton's going to be someone we hear more from, and do you want to hear more from after this documentary comes out properly? He has his book deal as part of Dan Farah's organization. I think Dan Farah's the agent, or his agent's the agent, I'm not sure. Same people who sorted out Lou Elizondo's book deal. Lou obviously went quiet during that time till release. Will Stratton do the same?
I would expect so. I would expect most of Stratton's is written already, to be honest. When they were shopping it around, they probably had it in the bag, because Stratton is very accomplished, you know, very, very well regarded, but he spent a lot less time kind of in the UFO world, so he had a lot less clout kind of going into saying, hey, I'm going to write this book, you know. But bouncing off what Lou did and saying, oh, I was involved with Lou and here's the paperwork to prove it, and I have all these other missing puzzle pieces for the story, and it goes deeper into like all the way up to now. I would imagine most of that is written. And
now would be the time with the documentary coming out. You would want to strike while the iron's hot.
Absolutely. The book might even be called Age of Disclosure.
Think so?
Maybe. I wouldn't be that out there, right? It would be a good pairing with Imminence and Age of Disclosure.
I'm going to give you a second to rethink that. There's a really low-hanging fruit there for the title of the book.
What have you got?
Page of Disclosure.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's the end of the show, folks. Thanks very much for listening.
Yeah, we're just quitting everything now. Done.
Yeah.
Mic drop.
Page of Disclosure. If they don't call it that now, I'm going to be like... Sure.
Yeah, just miss it. If they do call it that, though, that's a very niche like pun.
Yeah, if they do, I'm also going to be like,
ask for money.
That was my idea. Your t-shirt, something like that was.
Like, guys, come on.
Yeah, it's bullshit. Lisa said, "What are your candid thoughts on who the grifters are? I get weary of all the we know stuff, but we can't say, and all the all will be revealed statements when nothing happens. Are we being played, and if so, by whom?" I'm skeptical about a couple of the big names in UFO news and wondered if either of you are similarly becoming disillusioned. Also, any thoughts on the jellyfish UFO, which was all the talk at the time and has now dropped off into silence? Do the jellyfish UFO one first, Dan?
Jellyfish or grifters?
Jellyfish one first, right? You say jellyfish are grifters?
They are grifters, yeah. Okay. Well known.
So the jellyfish one, I don't know. And like with many... I believe Corbell and or Knapp got that video in good faith, being told it was something anomalous. I know when I had Sarah Gamm on the podcast, she shot that down and said it's not anomalous, and she's annoyed that it was leaked because she knows what it is but can't say. Corbell and Knapp both commented back on that, saying, well, given the data they also know comes along with it, but this maybe goes to Lisa's point. There's more to it. Lenval Logan also came out, who was part of that task force, and said, He basically wasn't going along with Seragam. And Lenval said there was more to it, that it was anomalous. So I don't know. And I think this is part of the issue where these things worked, especially organizations like the task force, where so many folk were involved ad hoc as opposed to being full-time employed staff on it, that they saw bits and pieces of information. And I think in general, that is the whole UFO topic. Everyone's got bits and pieces of information. Some have more bits and pieces, others have less. And you're all trying to make up what we think based on partial bits of story. So I've said, Lisa, I'm not going to name who I think the grifters are, because that's, again, very subjective.
That's what a grifter would say.
Yay, absolutely. You know, I would think there could be people who make shit podcasts. So for me, I love podcasts, right? I think someone just making a UFO podcast for the sake of it, are they grifting? Do they have a genuine interest? That's subjective. But if people like it, then no, it's just they're listening to that podcast and they enjoy it. Look at all the tech bros that are suddenly coming out with these podcasts. And episode one, I'm flying the 12 biggest names in ufology to my studio that I have just built for my first episode when I've never recorded a fucking thing in my life. Cool. So you have backing and money and blah, 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 blah. Are they grifting? Do they have a genuine interest, or do they just have a better start than I did? It's subjective. But then there's people, I get what Lisa's getting at, big names in UFOs. I think there's some people in ufology, bigger names who are being played, who are, some of them aren't being played. Some of them maybe get played sometimes, Dan. Am I making sense here? But I'm just trying to be like, I think it's a mix of everything. I don't know if there's anyone who is purely just full of bullshit and that's it. Then you've got to ask yourself, do some people let themselves get played? Like, if someone sent me, I get sent videos all the time, Dan. Maybe I should do one time where some of the emails I get sent, and I'm just like, some I don't respond to and others I do, right? If people are really persistent. But people send me videos, and I've got some today, but I won't reply to them for a few days because I can't keep replying to stuff on the day. I tend to do it in batches now, folks. So if you've not had a response off me in the last week, I'm just busy, but I will get back to you. But people send me videos and I can comment, but quite often it's just a light in the sky or an out of focus star. Someone tagged me on X today, one of the listeners, on a video for somewhere quite local to me. And my immediate thought was Chinese lantern, because it's focused in really bright, big orange ball comes out and then looks like it might be two or one, I'm not sure. And I was like, black sky, two lights moving, Chinese lantern probably. But there are people who, in this field, who have various different platforms, would see that video and share it and be like, UFO, genuine UFO, orbs in the sky. My first thought is Chinese lantern. It'd be really easy, Dan, for me and you to be like, nope, UFO, summoned psionically by the good people of Morpeth. But yeah, I'm just rambling now, Dan, so take over.
No, everything you said is fair. So for me, I'll name three people that I would describe as grifters, and then I'll tell you why, with a clear definition. So Stephen Greer, Corey Good, David Wilcock. These people are big, big, big money makers. And
sorry, David.
David Wilcock, like, I mean, if you haven't seen Darcy Weir's recent documentary, I would highly recommend you go watch it. It's all about David Wilcock and Corey Good and how they knowingly peddled absolute bullshit to make money. And they made a lot of it whilst doing it. You know, we're talking hundreds of thousands. So for me, it's the people who are big money makers. They're asking for more. If you see someone doing cruise ship tours, probably grifting. But the thing to kind of go to is, like, I always look at the definition of a grifter. And this is what the dictionary says. A grifter is a con artist, someone who swindles people out of money through fraud. If there's one type of person you don't want to trust, it's a grifter, someone who cheats others out of money. So I would add to that, or time, because, you know, today with watching stuff on TikTok and Instagram and stuff, people get paid to kind of put that stuff up. So people might knowingly put fraudulent videos out that they know is like a Chinese lantern and make money off it. So I think that counts. So for me, it comes down to someone being honest or genuine. If someone is doing whatever they're doing honestly, and they're being genuine and sincere about it, I wouldn't label them a grifter. It's where willing lies come into the picture just for the sake of making money. And I would put Corey Good and David Bullcock into that box. For me, I'd put David Greer in there. Oh, sorry, Stephen Greer in there.
Sorry, David Greer.
Yeah, sorry, just getting attacked. DavidGreer@hotmail.com. Let him know. Stephen Greer. But I can understand why some people wouldn't. I would just say when someone makes a claim that they can summon something on a ship and they book a cruise tour for you to go on and there's no guarantee of this happening and there's not even any proof that they can do it, I would say that's grifting. If you believe what he says, you know, don't let me make you feel bad. I don't think he's as bad as Corey Good or David Wilcock. Just, I would put him in that box personally.
Yeah, I get why, especially the first two. And with Greer, the lack of holding his hand up ever and saying, I got something wrong, is an issue. I've got no issue with people making mistakes, but when people can't hold their hand up and go, got that one wrong.
Yeah. Although, honesty and sincerity again, isn't it? It's people fuck up. You can just say so. It's fine.
I'll keep this really vague because I don't like getting into drama and gossip stuff, but there's some stuff out there that there are people making a name for themselves, and this is just a personal frustration, based on pushing lies and nonsense and then very quickly going, oh yeah, sorry, that was a mistake, yep. And then they go and do it again the next week on something else. And every week they just push lies and bullshit. And it's the stuff that I never liked about the UFO topic before I started this, Dan, where I would see, and I suppose it's more pronounced or prominent now, but yeah, for me to cover a story or a person or something, and then like the next week be like, oh, do you know what? They came out as a total BS artist, blah, 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 blah. But anyway, here's their mate on this week. And then going, ah, sorry, yep, happened again. Oh, see, next week, I've got this person on. They've made this claim. Now, the other two did the same thing. That's happening. And it's just like, come on. But in the age of sensational YouTube thumbnails, clickbait headlines, like you mentioned, Dan, with those articles, you know, it's like me for this show saying, quoting you on 600-meter spherical tubes found under pyramid. Yeah, you said that. But that's not that wasn't the context of what you said. But it'll look great on a thumbnail and I'll put your shocked face on it going, right? And some UFO pictures. Nah, I can't buy that kind of stuff. And I say, grifting's a dirty word. It's often misused, but so is a lot of language these days, to be honest. People can just pick and choose. You're not going to like everyone, but I think you always use the phrase, Dan, holding things lightly, I think is what you're, how you
word it. Take it seriously, hold it lightly.
Yeah, and I've said similar, that listen to everyone's opinion, but make up your own mind. So, and that includes with us, you know, I feel sorry now that, Dan, I was once invited on a cruise, on one of those UFO cruises.
But you didn't go. So you don't get to, I'm not labeling you a grifter.
Do you know why I didn't go though?
Go on.
Because the email started off with, hi Lou, really excited to invite you. And I was like, ah, this isn't meant for me.
Great start.
Yeah. I've had, this isn't anything sensitive, but I've several times had emails meant for guests. I've had it for Ross Coulthart before. I think I've had one years ago for James Fox, again, just because of having them on the podcast and researchers not doing their job. Do you ever remember early days when I got invited on, was it CNN, to do like a late night live? And it was like, hi Lou, we'd love to have you on the show this evening. And it was like CNN, I was going to bed. And it was like, again, they thought I was Lou Elizondo, that his email address, and invited me.
Yeah, because we joked.
You're dead. You were like, you should have done it.
Yeah. Just like, hi, my name's Lou Elizondo.
Me just sitting here like this, live.
Like, oh no, I'm the other Lou Elizondo. Hi. Sorry.
Yeah. Listen to my podcast and then hang up. but yeah, so these things happen, folks. But that was my moment when, oh, I've been invited on a cruise. Not me. Not me. I am open for cruise bookings, folks. My wife won't let me go.
I think that's a good point, though. Like I said about, if anyone does a cruise ship thing, bad. Like plenty of bands do cruise ship things, and I wouldn't call them grifters. You know, they sincerely want to give good shows to their fans and stuff like that. And I'd say the grifters of, say a UFO organization put a cruise together and then invited a bunch of speakers. They're not going to be vetting the speakers for what they're saying is honest. They're just interested in the money. So in that instance, I would say the grifter is the organization putting it together, not the people that are talking on the cruise.
Yep.
So, you know, don't mean to blanket. Like, if you're on a cruise, you're a grifter.
Yeah.
Mickey Mouse is a grifter.
Imagine people right now on a cruise listening to this going, oh, I feel
so
dark.
Like, what the hell?
You've ruined my whole vacation. Anyway, back on topic. Paul says, Hal Puthoff's hypothesis of the warp bubble was described in Lou Elizondo's book Imminent. Why do the interviewees in Age of Disclosure talk about this as if it's fact? Multiple interviewees say they've seen the bodies and the craft. How can they be allowed to talk about that? If it's not classified, why is this, particularly the craft and non-human craft, not officially acknowledged and documented by any governments?
It's a very good question. You know, the warp bubble stuff often goes back to Alcubierre, who wrote the paper in Cardiff, just down the road from me, claim to fame there, for the university, that is. But yeah, he came up with the theory of warp bubbles and how you could potentially make one using negative mass and stuff like that. And then that's kind of just been cited by people like Carnell and Puthoff in kind of making that a reality. There's lots of other work around it as well by other researchers that no one ever mentions. And I'm going to carry on that tradition because I can't remember their names right now.
God bless you.
Hold on. But this stuff is just theory. You know, and unless Hal has been in these craft and has operated one and has researched it, he doesn't really know how it works. He kind of is deriving the theory from the observables that they see. Included in that is that, you know, there appears to be some kind of a bubble around UFOs and some videos and things like that. Some people think that's pixelation. Some people say it's a warp bubble. That's why they can talk about it. Well, one, you know, like I just said, it's theory. But two, when it comes to biologics and stuff, I think it was, yeah, it was Lou that said, you know, he was, before the hearing, he was recently in a skiff and he asked if he could talk about crash retrievals and they said no, and he had to sign an NDA to say he wouldn't talk about it. So there's certainly an aspect of the conversations going further and further and further as time goes on, but they're kind of, like you say, trying to coax the information out as opposed to just going, we're just going to blow the doors off this thing and be damned with the consequences. They're trying to do it in a slowly, careful and considered way. So
you know, I think, Dan, something I'm starting to focus on more, just in my thinking as it changes slightly, isn't so much the what are they talking about or not talking about, but the why. You know, like, so I could jump on Lou Elizondo saying, can I talk about crash retrievals, and them saying no. People go, well, should. Okay, so take it a level down. Inception, you know, go to the next dream level. Why can't they talk about it? And don't just be like, they're trying to keep it secret. Yeah, but why? So go with the why. You know, is there potentially a good reason for it? What might that reason be? Sure, you can get to the point of saying that the public should decide what a good reason is. I said this to Jason Sands last week, because he said there are elements of this he doesn't think the public are ready for. And I said to him, I understand that, but there are a lot of folks who would say that's for the public to decide themselves. So, but then again, it goes down to that whole thing, Dan. Someone pulls you in a dark room and says, in 5 minutes, here is the entire history of this topic and why we want to keep it secret. Maybe you come out that room, Dan, going, yeah, actually, that's some good reasons why we should keep this secret.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we don't know.
I forget the film Encounter. I can't remember the name of the film, but but it was a scene exactly like that in the film. And it was basically the head of the program kind of saying, what, you want us to tell the American people that they're not safe at night, that they could be taken through the walls and windows and there's nothing we can do to protect them? That's what you want us to say? Like, yeah. And until we actually have something that we can do about this and tell them that they're going to be safe, we're not going to be talking about this.
Yeah, No, that's fair. Getting towards the end of these, Dan, you've been with us for a long time now as well, and it's getting late on our ends, isn't it? Bent Spoon says, no question, just a comment. I use a horse race as an analogy for the phenomenon. Everyone in the world is on their own horse of belief, whether they know it or not. Some don't realise that they're even in a race and haven't even left the starting line. The ones that are following the topic, like me, are all at different stages of belief in the race. I look behind at the earnest faces on the riders and consider how and what I used to think about the topic and how slow I was back then. I then look forward, seeing only the riders' arses, and wonder if I'll ever be up there with Valet, Elizondo, Putoff, Nolan, etc. in their knowledge. Then Strieber comes along with talk about visitors and afterlife communication, and I slip out the saddle and get run over by the passing horses. I eventually clear the horse shite out of my ears, dust myself off, and jump back onto my horse and resume the race. I truly feel that the race will never end, and we will need to adjust our riding styles as the race evolves. I'm sorry if I didn't use a Marvel Cinematic Universe analogy, but I remember when Iron Man and his friends were only comic characters. Cheers. Very good, Bent Spoon. I like that one. And do you know what? Maybe, Dan, I'll just add to that. You know, maybe the race doesn't end, but maybe you just move on to a different course.
Yeah. When he was describing it as well, I was thinking football would be a good analogy because the football never ends, right? But the level of play,
a new season, a new competition, the team changes,
the people being involved, like that develops, and you can't, it's not the same every year. You've got to change things up, as the Welsh rugby team has found out recently, much to my dismay. But also, yeah. I wish I had enough money to buy a horse and just call it a horse of belief now.
Yeah, look out for that one at the 2:30 at Kempton tomorrow, folks. Horse of belief. So yes, yeah, there could be. Do you know what? If I was more with it, there's a whole bit there on. You could do like the whole, you know, horse of belief coming up fast, and I've got Mick West Seagull riding in second. And, yeah, you could go with
See,
that.
See, it's class. It'd be great. And then every post race interview, you could just be like, "Well, the horse believes it won. Are you going to tell it? This is the horse of belief."
Yeah. Last couple, Dan. Terence says, question. Well, obviously, it's a question. It's a question mark at the end of it. What do you think will trigger the 98% of the general public to finally pay attention to the subject and realise something is going on besides aliens getting out of a ship?
I think that's just a time thing. Like, not to give a cop-out answer, but if you look at... There was one release for the UK the other day where they compared the amount of people who believed were being visited by aliens from another planet. They compared that percentage of the population to what it was like 10 years ago. And it had grown from like 10% to like 50%, if I remember correctly. And I know America is the same. You know, that level of kind of people believing that is just going up and up and up and up. So I just think it's a time thing that inevitably people are just becoming more comfortable with this idea. And it's not just because we're having these conversations. And when I say we, I mean like the royal we, you know, aliens and UFOs being talked about in the news. I think just as to blame for it, the credit goes to things like the James Webb Telescope that are making people kind of see the images and look out and truly kind of go, "Whew, this is a big place. Like, surely we're not alone. There's space for that." And it's kind of like a lobster in boiling water. I've said it before, but I think it's true that by the time it gets to the point where the aliens will land on a lawn and walk out, I don't think people will be shocked by it.
It's just going to kind of creep up on them, and one day they'll realize, shit, look at all this evidence. Look at all these documentaries, articles, academics, scientists, organizations are all talking about aliens. And then there's just a sudden groundswell of people need to get into it. And maybe I would still like to think that either we get that whole, the James Webb's found something, or maybe we get like a modern day Phoenix Lights type event.
That'd be cool.
Suddenly people are like, shit, do we need to pay attention? Because over Boston, there's like a disc at night or something like that. Something pretty unmistakable. And maybe it does generate a conversation of, yeah, is it a government thing? Is it not? Blah, blah, blah. But it gets people looking, going, no, we saw something, bang, in a big scale. So perhaps that happens. Yeah,
that'd be really cool. I was watching the original footage from the Phoenix Lights just the other day, and that the video is wild. Like, I can't even imagine how I'd be feeling if I was filming that, watching those lights just ping on over the city. Just goosebumps.
It was a while ago now, but I watched that found footage one you recommended.
Phoenix Forgotten.
Yeah, that was good. I'd recommend if folks want to watch something that's...
it's a unsung hero of the UFO movie genre. I never have met many people that watched it, but for me, it's one of the better ones.
Yeah. Do you know what was really interesting? Speaking to Dean Alioto, who done the McPherson tapes, listening to him talk about when he first made that, and the execs, like, they filmed it, and in the time they were filming it, they were really keen on it, and the organization changed. So by the time they went back from Canada to the US and they were like, okay, here's the film, the new execs were like, what is this piece of shit? Like, this is, like, video cameras? And bear in mind, this was before the Blair Witch Project.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, you've used VHS cameras, and it's just shot like a whole movie. And that you spent money on this. And they were like, he said they were disgusted, and they were throwing stuff in the room and throwing stuff at the TV. So they basically cut it down. And the guy who just wanted to kill it, but they spent money on it, put it on like a certain time slot on like a Tuesday night. And it was like the number one rated thing on the TV at that time. So they then released the longer cut version of it. And the main exec ended up kind of to lose his job or something off the back of it, because he hated it and slated it, and it turns out actually no, there was an appetite for it. So
that's great.
There's some good found footagey type food UFO movies out there, folks. Last couple then, Dan. Sigma says, why doesn't anyone talk about element 115 Moscovium, or rather Unknown Pentium? Are we on the verge of anything new in regards to its usefulness? So Moscovium, is it super lightweight? Synthetic super heavy element, first synthesized in 2003 and named after the Moscow region where the Joint Institute for Nuclear Research is there. Moscovium is a post-transition metal, very 2025, and is expected to be a solid at room temperature. It is highly radioactive and has no known biological or industrial use beyond research.
It also has a half-life of only 0.65 seconds. And this is probably why we don't talk about it much. That means that, you know, it disappears very quickly. It's an unstable element, which is what a lot of people kind of bring out when you kind of talk about Bob Lazar's 115. And it's like, well, it's not a stable element. And he said there are islands of stability that we haven't discovered. Mm-hmm. But certainly, I mean, it's not that 115, right? Like, technically, Moscovium should be what Bob Lazar was talking about, but it's not. So it's going to have some other element number, and in the future he'll change that number, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know too much about it. Is there an argument, Dan, that we're on the verge of technological progress in a lot of different ways, but it's going to be through the medium of AI and those types of discoveries, that it's going to be led by computers telling us this stuff rather than traditional scientific discovery and like humans having to do the work?
Yeah, think of it like, I'm going to give you a good Marvel reference here. Iron Man 2, when Tony makes the new element to put in his chest. You know, in the movie, his dad had found it decades before, but he didn't have the technology to be able to make it. And then Jarvis, the AI that Tony has created, is able to kind of help out and tell Tony how to kind of create it. And then Tony has to do the grunt work to create it. I think that's probably a fair reflection of the kind of science that's going to have to go on now. There'll be a lot of simulation from AI and stuff like that to suggest making technology we just don't have the capability to make. But there's a path there. And then 30, 40 years down the road, someone might be able to make it. But of course, AI also just hallucinates and makes things up and can't tell you the date sometimes. So,
yes.
Balance.
But that's also a lot of the talk around the legacy programs are that we have these crashed craft, and there can be sometimes decades where no work happens on them because we don't have the technology to do the work we had to do. So they literally put in storage, and it was like, we'll come back to this in 10 years, 15 years' time when scanners are better and these instruments are better and we have a better understanding of this so we can work on this. And you could well believe that. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
But final question, Dan, from Dahlia. She says, hi, I was wondering what you guys think about the disclosure fatigue that seems to be happening in the UFO world. Seems to me, and I'm certainly feeling this, that folks are getting frustrated at hearing the same things over and over again, but not really getting anything concrete. It's made me kind of apathetic about a subject I used to be very enthusiastic about. Are you observing this in the community? Do you have any thoughts on it? And what do you think can be done to overcome it? Cheers, Dahlia.
Yes, observing it, feeling it too, actually. I'm right there with you, Dahlia. It's hard to pay attention sometimes because you can't, it's difficult to get through those muddy waters and figure out what you're meant to be listening to, if there's anything worth listening to. And that's why, like, this news that David Rush is going to be employed and working with the task force, for me, I was like, cool, that's clear. I can see the reasoning for this. I can see the impact this could have. That's something that is worth getting excited about. Up until that point, everything else this year, I've just kind of been like, yeah, sure, we'll see where it goes. You know, like, there's not really an impact that it's having. And I find as well, and we've definitely talked about this before, how when you get these periods, you know, these fallow kind of seasons in the UFO community, that's when the infighting starts. People start nipping at each other's heels and drama happens and it just gets tiring. So yeah, I'm with you, and I would recommend to combat it, like, go away from the social media side of things, pick up the old John Mack books, the John Keel books, dive into that kind of stuff, and you'll find one that most of what people are talking about these days isn't even new. Like, this stuff was being talked about in the 60s and 70s, and they didn't have, you know, Alex Jones conspiracy theories to contend with back then either, so it was a bit more, you know, weighty and a bit more serious. But also, you'll probably go in directions that you didn't think you would go with your research. Mm. Like, you'll hear someone say something and you're like, oh, I'm going to go pick up this book. I never thought I'd read this. And you come up with some, like, really interesting original thoughts, which is really difficult in this field because almost everything's been thought about. But yeah, like, the thing that really drives me that I kind of learned from that era is that the extraterrestrial hypothesis is probably, like, done, and it was done a long time ago, that whatever this is seems to be something else entirely and a lot more complex. So that's what kind of drives me kind of looking for original ways to prod at this mystery.
No, I think you've said that really well. And for me, I suppose I'll speak personally. With the UFO topic, whenever I get like that, and I do, believe it or not, especially even doing this, I have to just remind myself of, why am I interested in this in the first place? What is the original origin point before? And I think social media has got a lot to do with it, like you say, Dan, the negative side of it that people feel. I had a sighting when I was younger, and that's enough for me to always have the interest of what was that? Because that was something I didn't misidentify. And then you hear so many other people having all these strange experiences they can't explain. And that's what kind of pushes me on. And then, like you say, I think you can get caught up on the social media side of things. And if you stay away from it, it is a little bit of that other people's negativity and downplaying stuff and almost not giving you permission to believe what you want to believe in terms of this topic. You can feel a bit disheartened and deflated with it. But I do like going back sometimes in the topic and looking at, you know, old experiences, old cases. More and more I'm seeing things pop up where you find more obscure cases because we've got a lot more tools now that we can go and look at. And even just on YouTube, there's so many good sites, Eyes on Cinema, UAP Gerb, all these kind of ones where you find really well-researched and obscure cases you've maybe not heard of. And you can go, and that, like you say, Dan, it's like, you know, Simpsons did it, episode of South Park. South Park trying to find something original to do in an episode, and they couldn't because the Simpsons have done everything or a variation of it. It doesn't mean South Park can't go and put a new twist on it or a new thought. And that's what you're saying about going back and go find some old books. Have you read all the Valet stuff? Have you read all the Mac stuff? You know, go and pick something up and try and find a new angle for this topic to maybe reignite your fire with it. The interest will come back, Dahlia. And that's the same for anyone. I'm sure for most people, you don't need to leave the topic altogether. I think people that say, I'm going to leave it. Okay. But you've had an interest in the first place. What was that? You can get that back. And for me, it reminds me, Dan, of like, there's a phrase in wrestling where in the old days, wrestling used to be split into territories. So in the United States, you would have like somewhere in Texas, New York, you know, Washington, it was all split up. And you would get well known in a territory, but the audience would get bored of you because they had seen you now for 3 months, Dan. They've seen your matches, they've seen your moves. You're no longer interesting. You're no longer new. And something else has come along that's got their interest. You didn't then leave wrestling. The phrase would be, well, go away and learn a new hold. So go away and reinvent yourself. Go away and do something different. Now, the audience is always going to be there, but they're looking at something new now. So a new direction, a new narrative, a new agenda, new names involved in the topic. And if that's not for you, take yourself away and go find an element of the topic or another part of the topic in wrestling. It was another territory. So you would go to New York. No one in New York knew who you were because there was no social media. You were brand new there. So there are parts of this topic that people like me still haven't even touched on yet. I've not read any Keel. That's something I can go and do. You know, there's so much.
Which is wild to me still.
But there's loads. And maybe that's
there's so much, right?
But that works for me just now. But there'll come a point where I probably need to go and do more of that. And I will when time allows it. But you can evolve and develop and change how you view this topic and others. So don't let it get you down. I think it's normal to be fatigued with anything. And like that, I honestly feel part of the fatigue or deflatedness, one, the big one, social media, and seeing so many other people's opinions. People have always been stupid, and I don't mean everyone. No one listening to this is stupid. But on social media, you can now see everyone's thoughts and opinions, where for centuries and millennia, you didn't. Now you do, and that can't help but influence you. So you're allowed to enjoy the topic, come off social media, but curate your list, do all that kind of stuff, but just find something again you enjoy about it. Because remember, big picture, whether you've had an experience or not, this is a topic that we're talking about. We're pretty close to seeing something big, and some of you are going to hate this and roll your eyes. But I do think we might, I think we might be at a point, and this is the second part of the fatigue. So much is happening now at once. You've gone from the extreme of not a lot to so much news. Dan, how much stuff that happened in the last 3 months have we probably not talked about today?
I can think of a few things. Like,
yep.
Yeah. In the long term, you kind of, you know, it'll fall away, but we could do this probably every 2 days and have an hour discussion to fill.
Not when did we last talk about the mummies, the Mexican Peru bodies?
Yeah.
That's still happening.
Yeah, still going on.
It's not going away. So yeah. Hang in there. Go grab a book, grab one of Dan's recommendations, go find some Keel or Mac, go watch some old documentaries. Jump on YouTube and watch some for free. Stuff's happening.
Buy a telescope.
I've got one down there I'll give you. It's under there. I got it for my birthday 6 years ago and barely use it. I don't use it.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, take Andy up on that. Get his telescope.
Yeah. Shipping to Dahlia out there in the States is probably expensive, so you're better buying your own. But listen, Dahlia, you feel it. Other people feel it. A lot has happened. For me, doing this, and hopefully you're listening to it, is quite therapeutic, Dan, because being able to talk through stuff with you, it does help me also go, oh, this is more important than I thought. Oh, this is less important. This can just drift away. Or some stuff comes back into view. But yeah, and I'm sure other people feel the same as well, Dan.
Should we change the name of the show to Clearing the Mud?
Clearing the Mud. Muddy Bootprints. Muddy. What was Lou always said? Muddy Bootprints.
Muddy Bootprints. Puddle of Mud. Oh, wait, that's taken. Yeah.
Everything is so bloody because of the gravitational field around the... there's one for the 2000s. Dan, I want to finish off with something a bit closer to home for you very quickly, because I know we're going almost 3 hours now. Dr. Daniel Stubbings. I know you know Daniel well. He has sent out an email asking folks, and I said I would read this out for him. Basically, research participants needed. We would like to understand more about the mental health similarities and differences between people who have seen UAP and those who have not. And there's a link I'm going to put in the comments for you to click and fill out a survey for participation in this. Daniel Stubbings is at Cardiff, I believe. Yeah, university, is that
right?
Yeah,
that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and do you know much more on this, Dan? Because I know you speak to him.
I mean, about the specific thing, no, but I know that he's basically trying to do what John Mack was doing. But in the modern day, his colleagues, you know, aren't going at him for being engaged in the subject. He's genuinely trying to help people and to help kind of distill some really interesting data about experiences. And he's a super nice guy and like just genuinely... Yeah. Caring, you know, I know he spent a lot of time doing palliative care with people who were passing over and things like that. He's just very delicate, very caring. If you've had an experience, please fill it out. Dan won't guide you wrong. He'll be a great contact.
And also it's people who have and haven't had experiences around their mental health. So anyone can fill this out, folks. So I'll put the link in the description. Give it a click. And there's loads of disclaimers on there and stuff. And he says, you know, there are some like go read it, and he's explained it all on that form as well. So thank you, do that for Daniel Stubbings. And Dan, thank you again for your time. It's been a long one today, but it's been good.
Hashtag do it for Dan. Yes, it has almost 3 hours, but it's been wonderful to be back and to sift through some things. And thank you to everyone for listening and sending in your questions. As always, they were wonderful.
Dan's too nice. They were perfectly adequate. Some of them are bang average. Others were better. But yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, folks, for listening, and speak to you very, very soon. That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show out on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify. Just search That UFO Podcast Premium. YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a Tic Tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little rain.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.